Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 116.
I just have to tell you guys the funniest thing. So Kelly is really still struggling with the 116 versus 116. thing, and right before we were about to record, she was rehearsing it, and she's like, "This is episode 116. This is episode 116." And then she's like, "No, no, it's not. It's episode 116. God!" So she was like rehearsing the wrong thing.
I have stuffed up that bit of the intro so many times and had to re-record it. It is four words. Well, actually, it's more than four words because 116 is an extra three words, but. Yeah, how do you stuff that up? Like I said, and we're 100 episodes into doing this show, so what is going on there? But anyway, Carl's review of the week.
I think you just got screwed once we hit. You just got screwed once we hit 100.
I know.
That just totally threw you. So our review of the week comes from Sars Dog, and she says, "I love this show. I love their banter. I can't wait for it to be released each week. I'm the opposite of them, but have learned so much and applied a lot to my life."
Thanks so much, Sars Dog. There's a chance we may have had this review before, but yeah, because I was looking through all our reviews and trying to choose one for this week, and I chose this one because Sars said she is so different to us, and I love that because I do sometimes worry that, oh, look, like, you know, the thoughts that we share or the advice that we give works for people who are like us. I just love finding out that, you know, the people who fall under the band of self-improvement junkies, which is the people who listen to this show, come from all angles of this thing. You know, so yeah, I appreciated that Sars said she's not like us, but she still appreciates and can put into place a lot of the stuff that we suggest. So that's very validating and I appreciate it. Carl's your random thing of the week.
So I'm sticking to the vintage theme at the moment. And if you're a little bit queasy, skip ahead. This isn't like a completely gross story. It's a little bit gross. It does contain vomit, but only in the fact that vomit exists and not in that anything particularly – well, all right. I'm just going to tell you the story, but I have warned you that it is a vomit story, but it's a very funny, weird one, and it is vintage. So this is a high school random Carly story.
This is not last week.
I don't know if I've told – this was what?
This is not last week. As in you didn't do this last week.
No. So I don't know if I've actually told this story before, but my vomit was once on TV. My bus stop when I was a teenager was right outside of a service station. And one morning I was really sick, but because I've never really been much of a vomiter at all in my life, and I had this like crazy vomit streak of like 12 years where I hadn't vomited, and I would have been like 14 at the time, and I just was not a spewer. And then I was sitting at the bus stop going, oh my God, I feel really, really sick. And because I hadn't thrown up in many, many years, I didn't know I was about to throw up. And then so I just threw up on the footpath in front of the bus stop. And then I was like, oh my God. And then so I called my mum to come and pick me up, and she came to pick me up. And then that night I was lying on the couch. Turns out I had like a gastro or a food poisoning thing. And I was sitting lying on the couch watching TV, and it turns out that the service station where my bus stop was got held up during the day in a robbery, and a film crew went out the front and filmed out the front of the service station, and my vomit was on the footpath out the front of the service station. It was on TV, and I was like, "Mom, Dad, my vomit's on TV! My vomit's on TV!" And everyone came and looked at it, and they were laughing because my vomit was indeed on TV.
We're gonna change the order in where we put this thing, because I always feel a bit like, and now for the recommendation of the week. That's just the segue is all wrong there. I think we just open with a monologue from you.
But it also just depends on the story as well. Like sometimes it segues quite nicely, and sometimes it's just like, well,
where do we go from?
Can't really say
where
much.
Where do we
to
go
that?
From vomit outside the petrol station? Okay, so recommendation of the week. My recommendation is Twitter. Yes, Twitter.
Wow.
I know. So Twitter, like, you know, if anyone was back on Twitter, cool, you know, go back 8 years ago, it's where I met everybody. Most of the people I'm really good friends with in the Australian blogging scene, because Twitter used to be a great place for having conversations and you know, and where people shared each other's work and stuff. And then somewhere along the line, I think all the conversations moved to Facebook, and then Twitter just became this big like shouting match kind of scenario. And so we all left Twitter. But Facebook is really, really annoying me at the moment. It is so boring. The algorithm is killing me in that it's just showing me boring crap. And just showing me the same conversations over and over. Like I might have liked something and now it's showing me that conversation over and over again because my friends are responding to it.
And then 5 days later, it'll bring it back up again. And you're like, oh my God, I'm so over this conversation.
Yeah, I just
now
don't care anymore. I don't care that like my friend painted her hair rainbow colors and I thought it was really cool, but now everybody is commenting on it and this is all I am seeing in my feed and it's infuriating. So I am more and more going back to Twitter. And you know what? It's not the same in that it's not like the same conversational style thing happening, but I don't know. I seem to have a nice mixture of people I'm following at the moment, and I'm getting a nice mixture of opinions on things that I am interested in. And yeah, I'm quite enjoying it on Twitter. So there you go. That's really random. But you know.
Yeah, that's vintage as well. Like that's
very vintage.
I actually don't have Twitter on my phone anymore and haven't for ages.
Wow. It's actually the first place I go now. Like if I'm like going Twitter, even Instagram is annoying me a little bit. It's just, you know, it's showing me stuff from 5 days ago. So, like, you know, I follow the US Open on Instagram and it shows me like a match that happened 3 days ago. And I'm like, you know, dudes, come on. This is where the non-chronological thing really falls down. So, yeah, Twitter's doing it for me. And who knows, maybe none of them will be doing it for me and then I won't be able to use my phone at all. And what will I do?
Yeah, I've been finding Facebook quite bland recently too, but it tends to pick back up again. So my recommendation of the week, and I'm pretty sure I ruined this one last week, but duck eggs. So we got given duck eggs and Kelly's reaction was my reaction. I was kind of going, duck eggs. And then they're literally just the same as chicken eggs. They're just bigger and richer and yummier. And I watched a video about duck eggs and this guy used a really funny word to describe them and now I can't remember it, but I'll try to remember it for you, but God, it was funny. I was weirdly worried that there would be actual baby ducks in them, but there wasn't. They were just like just giant yolked chicken eggs. They were great. They're just like regular chicken eggs. So, yeah, I think it is just because, ducks not as readily available.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I'm imagining like when I think of a duck egg, I'm thinking of a duck down by the lake and someone taking the eggs out of the duck's nest down by the lake, as opposed to, I'm sure they're farmed in the same way that chickens are farmed. And
yeah,
it shouldn't
exactly
be one is better than the other. And we probably shouldn't even be eating chickens' eggs, but okay, let's not go there. If you are our best friend. So I will have to say, so Francesca, not her real name, sent us, it was quite a long message, so we can't share the full length of the story, but Carly has kind of shortened the gist of what she was saying so that we can kind of get, because this is an interesting situation, so we thought it was worth sharing.
Yeah.
So go, Carls.
So my questions are, how do I have a conversation with my boyfriend about cheating? Is it cheating if you're not actually official? And is this situation my fault because I wasn't clear with him? What would you do in this situation? So Francesca said she was dating this guy for 6 months last year. We discussed that both of us were only interested in monogamy. However, we were not official. Then he went overseas for 6 months to study. We weren't technically together when he was overseas, but he messaged me several times per day, every day, often approximately 7 messages at a time. Then we began FaceTiming approximately once a week. And when he got back to Australia, we started hanging out as we had before. This included hanging out with our families and friends several times per week. We exchanged birthday and Christmas gifts. 1 month after he got back, we decided to be official. Since then, we've been planning holidays together and have even built a veggie garden and are in the midst of preparing it. Just before our 6 month anniversary, he told me he hooked up with 3 girls while overseas and slept with another girl he met on Tinder over there. I'm upset he didn't tell me sooner or at the time, as I thought his constant messages meant he was thinking about me and not hooking up with other girls while overseas. Please help. Is this my fault? Should I be upset? Should I have made it clearer? Did I give him permission to do this? Is this cheating? What would you do?
Okay, so is this my fault? No. I always think other people's behavior is theirs to own. And if people, especially partners, are trying to blame their behavior on you, that's a red flag. Should I be upset and should I have made it clearer? So in the longer version of this email, it did sound like she had made her feelings clear and what her intended actions were going to be when he was overseas. And she made it clear that she wanted to be exclusive to him and she wasn't going to be with anyone else while he was away for 6 months. He sounded like he was hedging his bet, so he didn't make that commitment.
His reply was, I enjoy hanging out with you.
Yeah. So he was hedging his bets. So should she be upset? It's hard to know because he didn't make the same commitment to her that she made to him. But yeah, it was a lot of the language around her questions was she was asking, should she take the blame for it? So she's like, did I give him permission to do this? No, he didn't need permission. He just did it. But it's not your fault and it's not you giving him permission to do these things. Is it cheating? Look, these are just my opinions. If it feels like cheating to you, then it's cheating. It doesn't sound like he made a clear commitment to be exclusive to you while he was away. But his actions, which were constant messaging, suggested that he was being exclusive. So to me, that's a bit manipulative. And I'm not saying his intention was to be manipulative, but it's manipulative anyway. It's kind of making you feel like you're very special to him and he's missing you greatly. So you adjust your behavior accordingly, but he's not doing it at his end. Is it cheating? It isn't. But if it feels like cheating to you, then it's cheating. That's my thought. And then she kind of said, what would you do? And I said, look, if I stayed with this guy because I really, really liked him, it would be with my eyes wide open. And I'd also be hyper aware of changing your behavior and preferences. So in the longer version of this email, she said that she indicated to him that she needed a little bit of time on her and he was wanting to see her every single day and be with her all the time. And she was like, no, I need my own space. And he was making her feel bad about that. So I just said, like, I'd be hyper aware of changing your behavior and preferences to suit his need. And I guess, like, just really, really eyes wide open. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was nodding all the way through Kelly's response. And my thoughts are, I feel like if you want to be with someone, you're with that person. So Ben and I were together for 2 years when I moved to Melbourne and he lived in Canberra. So we were long distance for that time. And there wasn't even a question about whether we'd stay together. We just knew that we would. It sounds like you weren't together when he was overseas and that was properly decided. But I do feel like there's a whole Ross and Rachel situation going on here for the Friends fans out there. I mean, like, technically they were on a break, but it was still a complete dick move for Ross to sleep with the Xerox girl the day they broke up. And I feel like it's the same thing with this guy. Like, you weren't together, so technically him hooking up with other girls. I don't like the Tinder thing.
Yeah.
I feel as if that was I feel like if you definitely weren't together, I feel like that was made clear. So if he happens to stumble upon, you know, a cute girl at a bar and they have a bit of a pash, that's forgivable. But the whole searching for it on Tinder thing seems a little bit not great. But that's neither here nor there. But I do think that him texting you all day and then being with other people is a real cake and eating it too situation. Yeah. I mean, you know, be with other people, but don't lead you on by texting you all the time. And also, I feel like he might have been doing that a bit to make you not hook up with other people while he was away.
And that was what I meant like by being a bit manipulative and a bit, I didn't say the word dickish, yeah, but I was thinking it. And, you know, I don't like, you know, we don't know this guy. We've only got one side of the story, but. And so we can only comment on it from that move, but I would just, yeah, if someone did that to me, I would feel like it's a bit manipulative and a bit of a dick thing to do. So sorry if any kids are listening. I'm assuming no kids are listening to this one. My God. We might need to put a parental guide on this.
I think Kelly and I are on the same page with that. But I also think, like, I wouldn't write off the relationship. I think it sounds like he was doing a bit of soul searching. And again, I do also, I mean, I can't tell by the exact circumstances, but I do feel like you might be significantly younger than Kelly and I.
Yeah.
And I do kind of feel as if, this is such hard advice to give, but if everyone was judged for the rest of their lives on what they did when they were 20, no one would have any friends. Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of learning how to have relationships and treat people and figure out how to move in the world that happens when you're in your 20s. And I think it's good to just give each other a little bit of leeway with that kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I too got the impression that they're quite young, and it does feel a little bit not quite rite of passage, but you have to find your way through these scenarios and think we do things to each other when we're young. For whatever reason, we're commitment phobic or we're worried about, like, Ant and I hooked up when we were 18, you know, and people often, like, someone asked me the other day, actually, like, we did have a little bit of a break somewhere around the 5 or 6 year mark where we did see other people very briefly. But, you know, if we hadn't, like, he would have been the only guy I'd ever been with as an adult. And people were saying, like, would you have regretted that? And I'm like, well, no, because he's great. But it is that age is usually an age for a bit of experimentation and a bit of finding. Like, I'd had boyfriends before Ant, so I kind of knew that when I was with him, he was the right person. But also we grew a lot together. We did not nasty things to each other, but we did dick moves to each other. But we stayed with each other and learned and grew together. So, yeah, as Carly said, it's not like you're going to write off this relationship because he did this. It's just more there's got to be growth. And if as long as you two are growing yeah. together and make, you know, you're making mistakes together but growing together, then you're sweet. But if you're growing and he's not, then you got to move on. So, yeah.
Whew. Yeah.
That was a doozy.
That was a big one.
So the topic of the day, I wanted to circle back to this because back in episode 110, we discussed the four burners theory that posited that we kind of all have four burners, family, health, work, and friends. And if we want to be successful in life, in theory, we have to turn off two of those burners completely. And, you know, all seasons of life, because we spoke about seasons of life in the last episode. And actually, Carly talked about burner seasons in, you know, the four burners episode that we did, where, you know, it's very hard if you're in a season where your friendship burner is turned right up, you're going to find it very hard to make friends with someone whose friendship burner is turned right down for whatever reason. So anyway, so what emerged from that episode was that Carly and I both felt that we have dialed our health burners in to a point where it's relatively easy to keep that burner simmering very gently in the background. No matter what's going on in our life. So a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, when things get busy or when I'm pushing for something, health burner is what, like, the first thing I turn off. And we're both of the opinion that it's really important to keep that health burner simmering, even if it's at a very low level, because it's so much harder to regain health than it is to maintain it. So I guess that's the first point I wanted to discuss today is this idea that, yeah, it's easier to maintain good health than regain it. And I guess for me, a time in my life where I had to almost start from scratch, and which is why I don't want to ever start from scratch again, because, you know, all through my life I've been a healthy person, but I had a period in my adulthood where I had, you know, I'd been pregnant with Jaden, I'd, you know, had him as a baby. And then I just started falling pregnant all the time and kept losing the baby. This is about 6 months after his birth, 5 or 6 months. So for I'd had 9 months of being pregnant and then, you know, 6 months of being a new mum and not being able to do a great deal exercise-wise. And then I had 18 months where I was basically pregnant the whole time, you know, either coming in or out of pregnancy. It was a really, really weird time. My body didn't know if it was coming or going. My health was very poor because the doctors were like, well, it's good to exercise, but we don't know what's going on with your body. So maybe you just need to take a break and not do anything so that this baby can bed down. And then I would lose it. And then I would, you know, be depressed. And so there was just so much going on and my health was just a shambles. So my physical health was a shambles. My mental health was a shambles. I wasn't eating well because I just didn't care anymore. And it was a really bad place to be. And after the fourth miscarriage, I actually said to Aunt, okay, I need to get my health back because this next shot is going to be the last one. And I want to give this baby like every chance of sticking around. And so I kind of took like 6 or 8 months of, and I had to literally start from scratch where I spent the first month going right. And I did it bit by bit because I knew from experience that when you're like that, what you want to do is you just want to change everything all at once. You want to start the health program, the exercise program, and you want to start the new diet and you want to do the things for your mental health. And I knew that that was a bad way of going about things. So I was like, I'm going to do this slowly. I'm going to spend a month just focusing on diet. And that's when I did I Quit Sugar, which is a very, back then, very gentle, and it still is today, a very gentle.
I think you can't do it anymore,
Stopped now. So I did like the very, very first one way back when it first started. And it was a very gentle way to just refocus on what you were eating, take processed foods out of your diet, take added sugars out of your diet. And so I spent, you know, a month to 6 weeks focusing on that. And I didn't worry about anything else but that. And then I very slowly, and then I introduced daily exercise into my rotation. And that was, I took a something is better than nothing approach. So I had no fitness. Like I couldn't go and do a class. I couldn't go for a run. All I could do, I literally started with walking 2 laps around my block. And then I just built up really, really slowly from then. And then I spent like kind of another 6 weeks going, right, my mental health still pretty average. What do I do here? I started seeing a therapist. I was journaling. And I built that back up very, very slowly and I got myself into a good place. And then we did, and I'm not saying that's the reason why we had a successful pregnancy the fifth time, but.
So random segue, did you get morning sickness when you were pregnant with Mia?
Yes, quite bad. But the one before that I also had, that the one before her was also really, really bad. Like I was having to go to sleep for like 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the day and I thought that one was So I thought that was the real deal, that one. But then I didn't really peg, but there was a day where I was like, oh, my God, I feel so amazing and look, it's spring and, you know, you've got the window down. There's good music. And like 2 days later I was like, oh, hang on a minute, that's not so good. And, yeah, sure enough, I had lost the baby. But, yeah, I had quite terrible sickness with Mia. And it's funny because I just embraced that morning sickness hard. I was like, every day that I feel sick is a gift because that this baby is sticking. But interestingly with her, I had a really massive bleed internally, subchorionic bleed, and that was touch and go. And I was meant to go to New Zealand with Aunt and Jaden for a family reunion.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't go. I sent them anyway because I'm like, look, it's 50-50. I'm either going to lose the baby or I'm not. There's no point in you sitting around here at home waiting for me to lose it. And what I went to my mum and dad's and I just like literally lay on my back for 9 days. And sometimes I wonder if like that's literally what made her stick around, but who knows why she did, but she did. And ever since then, like that foundation that I lay, getting fit and healthy mentally and physically and getting my diet under control ready for her, I've kind of been able to maintain that ever since. And that's kind of what I return to now. But what we were trying to say is it's easier to maintain than regain because, like, it took me so long to regain that health when I lost it. Have you had a same situation, Carls, where you have had to almost start from scratch?
I have, yeah. I was really, really sick for a full month a few years ago and getting back into the habit of going to the gym and eating well was just unbelievably hard. Like my body hurt and I was hungry all the time and it took a good couple of months to reset it. But ever since then, I've been really, really careful about never dropping the ball on my health when I have the choice to drop the ball. So I used to kind of hit kind of about the 17th of December and then I just kind of eat and drink myself stupid until the first week of January. And then I'd obviously gain 5 kilos, and then I'd have to work really hard to get that off again. And it'd be close to 5 or 6 years now where I just don't do that anymore. Like I give myself, you know, Christmas Day, and, you know, I'll, you know, drink more alcohol than usual and, you know, go to a few more parties and that kind of thing. But I still go to the gym. I used to be like, oh, I don't have to go to the gym because it's the 26th yeah. of December. Like why do I have to not go to the gym because it's the 26th of December? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's a bit like being on holiday, isn't it? It's a bit like, why do we just think it's okay to go on holiday and just let every, like, you know, within reason, but it just creates this cycle of losing and having to regain and losing and having to regain. And first of all, that's not great for the body.
It also creates a mental space of yeah. it being optional. Whereas,
and deprivation as well. Like, yeah. you know, if you're on holiday and you're eating well or not drinking quite as much as everyone else, is like, oh, you know, I'm feeling deprived, where it shouldn't be feeling deprived. It should just be, this is just what I do. I don't know if that's realistic or if that's just me.
No, that's me as well. And I do it because I want to feel good. I don't want to wake up the next day feeling horrible. I want to, you know, go for a walk on the beach or, you know, climb up a mountain or, you know, and I will eat, you know, different foods when I'm traveling, but, you know, I eat smaller portions of the non-nourishing foods, but I make sure that because I feel really weird when I don't eat my regular yeah. food, when I eat too many carbs and if I eat too much sugar, I feel disgusting. So it's more a matter of just, yeah, getting your health to that maintenance level and just keeping it there, and then just dipping in and out of you know, pleasure activities and lazy days, but just always coming back to it sooner than you think you need to.
Yeah. And I guess so the second part of this, like second talking point we have here, is like, what does our individual simmering health burner look like? And I guess this is the beauty of it, is if you just keep the foundation very simple, it is something that you can kind of execute when you're on holiday. Like, it doesn't matter where you go or what you're doing. If it's simple enough, you can execute it. And then if you need to ramp it up a bit when you get home, or, you know, you want to train for something special, or you want to, I don't know, lose a few kilos for something else special, like, you can ramp it up, but you can always return to the base thing. So my simmering health burner looks like eating well. And so I kind of roughly follow the 16-8 intermittent fasting. So I try to eat between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. each day. And I've just gotten into the rhythm of doing that, and now it's just how I eat. And I don't do it like religiously. Like, you know, if someone invites me out for breakfast and breakfast is at 8 o'clock, I'll have breakfast at 8 o'clock, and then the next day I'll start again. So I do the 16-8, but I do the 80-20, in that I feel like what I eat and what I do 80% of the time is what counts, and the other 20% of the time I can afford to be a little bit more relaxed. So that's eating. With moving, I move my body for at least 20 minutes every day. So this just allows me to maintain and have, you know, a healthy weight, but it's good for my heart and my lungs and my mental health. And it also means if I want to do something like train for a 10K or train for a half marathon, I'm like not starting from scratch. And it's also really,
you've got that baseline sitting there.
Yeah. Yes. Because there's nothing worse than starting from scratch with running. Oh my God. It sucks.
So bad. I've done it a few times in my life and it hurts.
Oh, it's so not enjoyable. So, you know, I don't want to hate running. I just go for like 20 to 30 minute jogs, three, four times a week. I know that's a lot compared to what other people do, but keep in mind, I used to train twice a day every day, so it's not a lot for me. And it just keeps things at a level that if I want to ramp up from there, I'm not having to start from all the way down the bottom. I do also believe, especially now that I'm 40, that strength work is very important. So as I mentioned to Carly a few shows ago, I have started doing F45, and that's specifically for the strength work. And I also believe that mental health is a crucial part of this health equation. And And so for me, staying on the right things, you know, the right side of things with mental health is watching what I commit to. So not overcommitting myself and not overextending myself. I know I need a lot of white space in my life, and I know I need a lot of opportunities to move slowly. I know that what stresses me out is being rushed. And when rushed becomes my default setting, like, it's a very slippery slope into depression. And then interestingly, I'd also say, like, one of my big triggers for anxiety when we're talking mental health is financial uncertainty. So because I know that, I live a really long way inside my means. And it sounds like, I'm not saying that to be like a virtuous person, like, oh, I live like really far in between my means. Like, we could afford to spend more than we do, but we don't. And we don't because of my anxiety, basically. I like having a really big buffer. And sometimes situations collide like they did last year, and our buffer got completely wiped out. And, you know, for all that, that's what that buffer is there for. What happened? My anxiety came roaring back, and, you know, I sought therapy and I did a whole lot of things to try and manage it. And in the end, I found the easiest way to manage it was just to work really hard to build that buffer back up. So, you know, you kind of do what you need to do. Like, sometimes you've got to work hard to change yourself, and sometimes you have to go with yourself and do the easy thing. And the easier thing for me with anxiety is just to have a nice buffer in the bank. Other people, like, they might spend more on therapy. So, yeah. ultimately, I do find that having a health burner that simmers along consistently gives me the energy and resilience to make the adjustments that, you know, we're always having to make adjustments all the time with regard to health and life and resilience in general. Having a health, you know, a good simmering health burner gives me the energy I need to make those adjustments. And kind of the way that I look at it, I look back in the past. And when I didn't have that resilience, because I didn't have that health burner at the right level, and Ant had to spend just a huge amount of time being an emotional buffer for me, like, you know, propping me up. And, you know, it's a great sense of pride for me today that he doesn't need to do all that heavy lifting anymore, because I can do it for myself. So that's another aspect to the, you know, the whole simmering health burner thing that maybe people haven't thought of. So, yeah, sorry, that was a really long monologue. Carls, what does your simmering health burner look like?
Mine is I do F45 every weekday. I've been doing that for it'll be 3 years. Wow. This summer. So I started in, yeah, February a few years ago. But before then, I'd always go to the gym or go to I used to like the Les Mills, like, yeah, pump classes, yeah. And stuff. I'm a real classes gal. I need there to be I like the class aspect. I like there being an instructor. I also like losing money if I don't go, because that's a huge incentive for me. So I do that every weekday. I've been doing it most mornings. For the first trimester of my pregnancy and halfway through the second, I could only kind of manage about 3 days a week. I wasn't sick or anything. It really depleted my energy quite a lot. So I could only sort of manage 3 days a week, but I'm back up to 5 days a week, and I'm a week away from my third trimester. So it's, it's been really good, and I've been totally cleared by my midwife and the physio to do it. Like, everything's where it should be, so I can still train relatively in a decent way. So I've been maintaining my fitness that way. I was fasting before I fell pregnant, but I've backed off a little on that, but I still stop eating dinner at 8. I used to fast from 8 till midday, but I now have breakfast at about 10 a.m. Yeah. So I wouldn't include that as fasting, because it doesn't even feel like I'm fasting. I'm just sort of eating when I need to. I think this is actually a really interesting conversation, because my health was in such a good place when I fell pregnant. I didn't change anything.
Yeah.
I just kept doing what I was doing and adjusted it slightly. And I mean, you're definitely not supposed to say this, but I've had an unbelievably easy pregnancy. Everything's been going very well. I didn't get any morning sickness. I've not had insomnia. My body has not been hurting. It's like I keep waiting for pregnancy to kick in, and I've got like 3 months left to go, and I can still button my jeans as well. So it's been a very fascinating experience. But yeah, just continuing on with the way that I've always been eating has I think really helped with my energy levels and feeling good. Throughout my pregnancy, I've stuck to eating low carb, high fat, and very low sugar. It just keeps my energy at a very good level. And I'm really quite proud of myself for not defaulting into, oh, well, I'm pregnant, I can eat whatever I want. Which I don't think that that's a terrible thing to do by any means. And I actually expected to crave things and want to, you know, eat different foods and stuff, but I just kept eating the way I was and it just worked. So I kept doing it and I'm eating pretty much the same. And I went through a weird period, actually, my second trimester, where I just wasn't hungry, which was weird.
Yeah.
I was like, that was really strange. But when I'm not pregnant, so that's kind of like I've stuck to my simmer health burner while pregnant. When I'm not pregnant, I ramp it up every now and then. So I'll do like an 8-week challenge, or I'll do like the whole 30, or I'll, you know, experiment with some sort of an eating plan or something, and or give up booze for I often don't drink for a couple of months in the year. So I always keep my health on the burner, but I will ramp it up a few times a year as well. And because I have it on that steady burner, it makes it so much easier to pick up and do to do a challenge at F45, or to run a 5K, or to, you know, do like a really strict no packaged foods diet or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when the baby arrives, because I know people will be thinking, ask her what she's going to do when the baby arrives, so I'm going to ask for them. So I know that what I've did when both my kids were born, as I got, like, I've never been a walker. Like, my friends laugh at me because I'm so not a walker. But when the babies were babies, I was a walker. And it was like every single afternoon, like, they would do their nap in the pram while I went for a walk for an hour. And it's so interesting how amazing that walk was for my mental health. It got me out of the house, but it was great for my body as well. So yeah, if you're into walking with prams, that one's available for you. But do you have, yeah, and it's hard to know exactly what you're going to do, but what do you think you're going to do once you're finished having the baby?
Well, I've done a lot of research, and again, this is just stuff that I've researched and something that I'm comfortable with. It's a loaded gun talking about your pregnancy and your giving birth plans and that kind of thing. And, you know, when I'm talking about what I'm doing, I'm not dissing what other people are doing, and everyone needs to make choices that are appropriate for them. I'm going to try for an unassisted birth. So I'm going to try to, you know, not have an epidural and just go for a natural birth. There's a whole thing at the moment where I think you're not supposed to say natural birth anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try to go drug-free, but...
And push it out through your vagina. That's what you're aiming to do.
Exactly. That's what I'm alluding to. Because I've done all the research, and that seems to be the best road to recovery option. Yeah. And I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I might, you know, throttle a nurse and be like, "Give me an epidural." Like, you never know.
And give me everything you've got. Well, I will tell you. I had quite a full-on, so I didn't have to have a cesarean, but when Jaden came out the size he had, good thing the doctor didn't know that's how big he was coming out, otherwise that's probably what he was suggested. But we had a lot of difficulty getting this 9 pounds 6 baby out of me.
Oh, Jesus.
Every midwife who came in the room afterwards like did a double take when they went back and forth between him and me, but it was a lot of trouble. They had to snip my perineum and stitch me back up. And so it was amazing because, like, the first day afterwards, I was like, I am never going to walk again. Oh, my God, everything is just awful. And it was just amazing to me how my body rebounded from this quite traumatic event. So, yeah, it's interesting that probably like the first – I'm not saying what you will or won't feel, but I will say your body is amazing. And
yeah,
it does. And I feel that if you go into pregnancy with a great deal of fitness, and if you maintain that fitness throughout pregnancy, I do feel it's much easier to regain. And not everyone is able to. A lot of people have things that prevent them from doing exercise when they're pregnant. But for those of us who are lucky enough to keep active and moving all the way through pregnancy, it assists us greatly in recovering after the birth. So I will say that if you've had a very crazy pregnancy today, and also you've been able to maintain your fitness, I think your recoveries from birth, even if it's a quite a wild one, will be quite easy. So anyway, don't want to lay that down, but
that's what I'm hoping. And I've had a few things pop up with my doctor's appointments that have made people say, look, I can't see any reason why, you know, your birth won't be fine. And when I say unassisted, I don't mean like I'm doing it in a meadow surrounded by like shamans or anything. I mean, like, I'm going to be in a hospital with medical professionals. I'm just going to try to go drug free as much as possible, unless I get really desperate, and then in which case, drug me up.
Yeah. That was me.
But yeah, so I plan to walk a lot after the birth, and I'm going to try to stick to low carb, high fat and low sugar because it's been excellent for my pregnancy, and I can't see why it wouldn't be just as excellent for breastfeeding. And I felt amazing the whole time, and I do think it's because I've been eating good nourishing foods and avoiding non-nourishing foods. I literally haven't had like a single donut or a chocolate biscuit or, you know, nuggets or anything the entire time, and I haven't really felt the need to. So I'm quite thrilled with that. I think it's been a really positive thing for my pregnancy. But yeah, my plan is to get back to the gym as soon as possible because I go a bit spare if I don't get to the gym. So yeah, that's my general plan.
Awesome. So our recommendations for building out like a nice simmering health burner plan, what should people focus on? I personally believe the very first thing you got to focus on is diet, because you can't out train a bad diet. Trust me, I've tried.
Me too.
I exercise to eat. Now I eat to nourish my body, and I exercise for my mental health. So I do feel diet is really crucial and the first thing that you need to look at. And Carls, you've written a blog post about this.
I have. I wrote this quite recently. It's called the Five Ways to Change Your Eating Habits Without Ruining Your Life. This is just an excerpt from it. So I found making healthy choices really difficult when I was younger because I had this victim mentality. Yeah. So if I had a salad, it meant that I was missing out on, you know, the pizza or the lasagna or nuggets or chips. And choosing the healthiest option is just completely exhausting if you maintain the attitude that you're missing out, or it's some kind of punishment to eat nourishing food. And once I changed my mindset from I'm missing out to I'm consciously making a healthy choice, it made it far less upsetting to have to constantly choose the healthiest option. It really does take work, and it takes a long time. Like, I did this for years before I didn't feel like smacking my skinny friend in the face while she was eating a chocolate sundae. But I don't even think about ordering anything other than a salad or a plant-based meal when I'm out. And it's just like a no-brainer good habit now. Like, when we went out for lunch that day in Melbourne and took a photo and put it in the Facebook group, and everyone was commenting on the healthy choices that we made, and we didn't even think about it. Like, we didn't.
No, it's just we went there because it did serve good food, and that was what we do. We didn't do it with the consciousness of, ooh, if we're going to share this on Instagram, we better eat good stuff.
Yeah, it was just default what was on our plates when we shared that photo. So yeah, it's that kind of thing. And then once you get into that mindset of this is just the way I eat, then it's just easy because you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second probably pillar of this nice simmering health burner is just daily movement. And like, I've found that the easiest way, there's kind of two underlying principles that make daily movement, I won't say easy for me, but they just are, it's just what I do. One is non-negotiable. So I just move every single day. I don't give myself a day. I'm a bit like the Gretchen Rubin thing of, it's easier for me to do something every day than to only do it 5 days a week. Because as soon as it's 5 days a week, I start negotiating with myself. And as soon as I start negotiating with myself, it just does my head in. So I don't like negotiating with myself, so I make it compulsory. I just do something every day. But I do, the second principle of that is, something so small, it would be stupid not to do it. So when I'm at, you know, it's cold outside and I just don't want to do anything, I go, Kelly, all you have to do is walk out the door and walk down to the bottom of the cul-de-sac. That's it. And if you just really, really don't want to do it, you can turn around and come back up and walk back in the house. And of course, I never ever do, because what's the hardest part? The hardest part is getting out the door. So, so insofar as like from what I can gather, creating this daily movement habit is set yourself such a small goal daily that it would be silly not to do it. And then whatever else you do beyond that is a bonus, but also set a daily goal as opposed to a 5 day a week goal. Carls, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I think the only difference between people who exercise every day and the people who don't is that the people who exercise every day exercise every day. It's not, you know, they're not kind of more magical people. They don't have better motivation.
Yeah, they're not more motivated. They're not more disciplined. They're not real. There's no different to you. And I completely agree with what you just said there. Yeah.
They also don't like it more.
No.
It's not like there are some people out there that just think it's awesome. I mean, I definitely enjoy exercise now, but bloody hell, I had to train myself into it. I was a kid who enjoyed craft when I was little. I mean, you had to drag me kicking and screaming out of my house to go outside and play. That was not the type of kid that I was. So you can absolutely train yourself out of that kind of anti-movement mindset. It's so important for your well-being. Again, as we were saying, you cannot out-train a bad diet, so don't even try. And if you're like me, you can't out-train a good diet. So for me, exercise is not even related to weight loss. I definitely get more toned when I exercise, and my skin's actually a lot better when I exercise as well. But I could exercise for 4 hours a day and nothing would happen to my body. It's just not a thing. So exercise for weight loss is pointless for a lot of people. So you really do need to retrain your thinking. I exercise to increase my lifespan and keep my body pain-free and also to improve my mood. I was actually talking to a midwife the other day, and she was like writing down all of this information about my medical history. And she said, "Oh, so how many times have you been in hospital before?" And I said, "Never." And she was like, "Never? Like, not for anything?" And I was like, "No, not for anything." And she's like, "What about like, have you had to have like surgery, or did you have to like, did you break a bone or anything?" I'm like, "I have literally never been to hospital ever in my life." And she was like, "That does not happen very often."
That's quite so weird.
I will be going to hospital for the first time at the end of this year. And I don't like, I mean, you know, it's my test group of one, and I can't say definitively that that means anything, but I do live an extraordinarily healthy lifestyle. And I think the fact that I've never, you know, had any major health issues is a pleasant side effect of the fact that I've exercised 5 times a week since I was 16.
Yeah, definitely. The third kind of pillar of like a nice baseline health routine is mental health. It is something we do tend to ignore a lot, but we do like talking about it on this show. So, you know, everybody is different with their mental health needs. I've spoken a lot about what I do to manage my anxiety and also to keep myself on the right side of depression. And it's mostly around creating a life that is busy but not rushed and not overcommitted all the time. Carls, you're a bit similar in that regard.
I am, yeah. I think it's really important to create boundaries and to be completely unapologetic about it. I think all of our listeners deserve, and I mean everyone, deserves and needs the space to be well mentally. And if that means taking a break from a difficult friend, taking a night off a week to do whatever it is that you want to do, or even going to the gym every day, just do it. If your mental health isn't in check, you're going to be useless anyway. I liken this to the burnt chop theory. So I love the burnt chop theory. So this was where we were talking about it's almost like a martyrdom thing that mothers will give themselves if they cook 4 pork chops for dinner. They'll give themselves the burnt chop and keep doing it every time they burn a chop. They give it to themselves, and then years down the track, they just lose their minds because they've been eating the burnt chop all that time and no one's noticed that they're eating the burnt chop. This has come up a lot in the podcast, and it's a whole thing of just retraining, particularly women, to put themselves first and stop sacrificing themselves for their families. It's also quite unnecessary to do that. I think if you if anyone thinks that you're selfish for going to yoga every day or for skipping book club because you don't feel up to it, they can actually just go and get stuffed. It's so important for people to prioritize their own mental health and to take care of themselves. And I can remember like growing up, and there was a real stigma around women who, you know, went to the gym and cared about their appearance. And a lot of other women would be like, well, how do you have the time? And you know, like, why do you get to do that? And I just think everyone should do that. I just don't think that it's unreasonable to expect to take an hour out of your day to move your body or, you know, do something that's actually going to help your mental health. It's crazy. Like, we don't have to be slaves to our families.
Yeah, totally agree. So yeah, so that wraps up the topic for today. Do look forward to having a longer discussion about that in the group when this episode comes out. So into our next two segments, which is Kicked Ass and Kicked Our Ass. I will say that Kicked Ass was I did a huge spring clean on the weekend because that's my favorite thing to do. It's so funny. The kids' playroom, like even Ant, like he saw me in there and he was like, wow, I can't believe it took you this long to crack, because he's like, even I had to shut the door on this room. And I was like, I know, right? This is an indication of just how busy I've been, that I too had to shut the door on this room and pretend it didn't exist. But I got in there on the weekend and I was, you know, and I was cleaning it out. And, you know, anybody else is cleaning out their kids' playroom and hating their kids and being resentful, and I'm like thanking them because this is my hobby, and I'm getting to like declutter. And I didn't take a before and after, and I totally should have. But we did a big spring clean on the weekend of that room. The rest of the house didn't need it because I just kind of spring clean as I breathe, and you know, pulled out a few plants in the garden that had been bothering me because they were dead, and I replaced them and put up a couple of last couple of pictures that I hadn't been able to get up. So yeah, that was my weekend and I loved it. It was so fun. So thanks Feral Kids for all the mess that you make in your playroom. What did you kick ass on, Carls?
It's just general kick-assing. Like, I'm just really on fire in general right now. So I've got really good energy, just getting lots of shit done, getting stuff sorted for my, you know, kind of unofficial mat leave at the end of the year, because I have to kind of schedule posts and make sure that all of my patterns and everything are all done for Crochet Coach and that's all ready to go, and that my VA knows how to do things. I'm definitely taking some mat leave, but I'll be doing little bits and pieces there, but I'm just making sure that 80% of everything is done, so that, you know, I can kind of, you know, jump into a Facebook group and put a post up or something like that. But yeah, it's all just going really well. I was quite worried about it, but it's all just working out really well and getting a lot of stuff done. And Ben's going away this weekend, so I'm planning on just, you know, knuckling down and doing a lot of filming. And yeah, everything's just good.
Oh, cool. I see you don't have a kicked our ass entry, so your life's so good at the moment. And mine's pretty lame. Mine's I love spring for spring cleaning, but I hate spring for allergies. So that's happening at the moment. I've forgotten that in spring I find it really hard to breathe, and I haven't been able to figure out, like, I have exercise-induced asthma, so I have an inhaler for that, but I've tried all kinds of things over the years to try and sort out why it is that just in spring, it doesn't matter, the inhaler doesn't do its job and other stuff doesn't do its job either. So yeah, that's annoying, but not really. I was scraping the bottom of the barrel for my kicked our ass.
Well, that's great. Yeah. What a good week for us.
So, yes.
So that just about wraps us up. Just a reminder that we do have a Patreon page where you can make a contribution to keep our show on the air. We are trying to reach a goal of $500 per month, and we're slowly, slowly getting there, but every little cent helps us and will keep us in your ears. And you can find that at patreon.com/straightandcurly.
Thanks so much, guys. And finally, do jump into the Facebook group and share your thoughts about this week's show. And we would love to hear if you too have kind of a really baseline simmering health burner situation going on and what yours looks like as well. So we'll see you in there. Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.